This is Professor Allen, and welcome to the Quarter Bin. In every episode of this podcast, I will summarize, criticize, discuss, and review some issues from my comic book collection, which many episodes I will select sort of at a random. Any books from my comic book collection are eligible, as long as I paid no more than 25 cents each for them. Were the issues worth 25 cents? Were they bargains at 25 cents? Or were they all overpriced? Stay tuned and find out. For this 79th episode of the Quarter Bin Podcast, we're looking at Doom 2099, numbers 8, 9, and 10, from Marvel Comics, cover dated August, September, and October 1993. Three books to cover this episode, so we'll put off feedback until next time. But I did want to take this opportunity, at about our 3-year anniversary of the show, to thank you all for listening and for the feedback, and also how closely I have become associated with people's quests for cheap comic books. I love being tagged in Facebook or on Twitter when someone goes and finds a great comic book for cheap, or when Dr. Ange is heading out to the 10-cent sale that he recently went to, or when someone buys a book for 50 cents or a dollar and says, "This look good, little too rich for Professor Allen's blood," or on the podcast that I listen to, that I get referenced in terms of cheap comic books. It seems like every second or third episode of Back to the Bins, someone makes a Professor Allen comment about their search for old and hopefully cheap comic books. Just recently on the Secret Origins podcast, Ryan Daly and Rob Kelly are chatting, and Rob throws out a "Hello, Professor Allen," when they were discussing finding books in quarter bins. And I laugh every time that happens. I think it's hilarious. And I really appreciate it, how people have taken the concept of this podcast and just run with it. At this point, I like to think that I am to cheap comic books what the irredeemable shag is to beautiful women. Of course, I mean without the restraining orders, just to be clear. But now it's time to head back to Latveria. Oh, and the future. Doom 2099, 8, 9, and 10 each had cover prices of $1.25, meaning I acquired each of these books at an 80% markdown. In the interest of full disclosure, for preparing the synopses for these three issues, I used the summaries at doom2099.com as a jumping-off point. Issues 8 and 10 were written by John Francis Moore with art by Pat Broderick and John Nyberg, and covers also by Broderick and Nyberg. But we'll talk about those two issues later. Issue 9 is a fill-in, written, drawn, and inked by Ernie Colon. Now, I'm not saying that's a bad thing, because Colon did the same thing with issue 16, a standalone that is one of my favorite issues of the first half of the series. But since issue 9 is out of continuity from the ongoing arc, I'm going to talk about it first. Here. Now. The cover of issue 9 shows our hero Doom looming lovingly over a futuristic cityscape, but with a Victorian cityscape at the bottom of the page, and a mysterious man is walking towards us. The story, titled The Spirits Within Me, starts with the word interlude, which does clue us in that this is out of continuity. Doom and Wire are still in the cyber world, ostensibly trying to locate Doom's memories. And they find themselves walking through the thick London fog in what seems to be the Victorian era. This is confirmed as the cry of a dying woman from a nearby alley brings the pair to the scene of Jack the Ripper's final murder. And then the killer attacks them, a man in armor. "You would be a noble knight, protecting the fallen women of London?" Doom lets the killer go, after allowing him to unburden himself of the secret that Doom came for. Wire asks what he hoped to learn from the killer. The secret of death. is the reply. At that, they tumble through a cyberspace portal, arriving this time to see the Frankenstein monster being attacked by a pitchfork and torch-wielding mob. "We are alike, you and I," he tells the monster, "creatures of fragile flesh and errant technology, born of forces beyond our control. So why do they call us both monsters?" He speeds off with Wire, after having obtained the secret of life. They leave the monster to the angry mob, which Wire doesn't really dig. Next, they meet the murderous Sweeney Todd and his accomplice, Mrs. Lovett. Doom understands that this trip symbolizes the underworld he's passed through. As they depart, Doom announces that each of these constructs has one kernel of the data he must recover, each representing a facet of his past or present life. Then he finds Dickens' great creation, Jacob Marley, who, among other things, tells him that he will be haunted by Professor Moriarty. This is the gentleman who is on the cover, by the way. Wire sees Moriarty for what he is, a viral anomaly that feeds off of information. Doom fends off his attack, realizing that the villain has palmed the knowledge which he seeks from the previous archetypes he's visited. Doom moves to nab this data, but Moriarty summons Jack the Ripper to take Wire hostage. Wire manages to disable Jack himself by overpowering him with data. Moriarty then alters the landscape into a virtual Reichenbach Falls. But he falls into his own abyss while Doom escapes. Both Doom and Wire exit the program, and we learn that the needed data is still lost somewhere in cyberspace. And we end the issue with nothing changed. All the chess pieces are back exactly where they were 22 pages ago. So as the legendary Trennis Magnus would say, what did I think of this? I mentioned that Ernie Colon does another issue, one of my favorites. And between these two fill-ins, he really demonstrates that he has a handle on the character of Doom. I don't know that he specifically picked these five characters to represent Doom's personality, but whoever did, nailed it. The combination of ego, nobility, pain, pride, genius, commitment, self-importance, separateness, and genius that these characters represent are terrific choices as Victorian characters that represent certain aspects of at least this iteration of Doom. What I like about Doom is how complicated his personality is, how multifaceted the man is. So presenting him as a combination of a variety of known characters is just a great idea. And for a fill-in, for an issue in which nothing happens plot-wise, nothing can happen plot-wise, the writer has to dig into character building, present a story that resonates emotionally. There are a lot of multi-part stories in classic Doctor Who that had this similar plot structure for, say, episode 4 out of 6. Lots of running around in action, but nothing actually being advanced in terms of the, you know, plot. But rarely did those episodes dig into character and emotions. Even more rarely did they do so with the titled character. I wish that they would have. But that's what Colon does here. He gives us insight into the character of this 2099 version of Doom, or at least how he sees himself, which is itself an insight into the character. And by giving him this many characters to interact with, he gives us enough action scenes, enough conflict, enough fighty-fighty, that you can get to the end of the story and not really notice that nothing has happened, because you've gotten a satisfying read. We also get a little bit of Wire's personality here when Doom leaves Frankenstein to the mob after having gotten from the monster what he needs. Wire wonders aloud to Doom, "Do you do this with everybody? Dispose of them as soon as you've gotten what you need from them?" There's also a nice little artistic thing in the Sweeney Todd section of the story where he goes from the barber, he walks down multiple flights of stairs to get to the basement where the woman is, and he mentions about going to the underworld. And then as he leaves and walks back up the stairs, he makes a comment about, "Now I'm prepared to ascend." And, you know, it's a silly little thing, but the fact that he walks down what appears to be, you know, 8 or 10 flights of stairs, and then back up them at the end of that scene, it's just a nice little symbolic thing. I want to mention that Cologne also keeps up John Francis Moore's habit of ending each story with a literary quote. This one is from A Christmas Carol. It's from Scrooge. "I will live in the past, the present, and the future. The spirits of all three shall strive within me." So, fitting in a couple of ways. Before I get too far lost talking about the story, I do want to talk about the art as well. Cologne also does a nice job in this era, mixing in the elements of the Victorian and the cyber worlds in ways that mostly worked. And his Doom is pretty good as well, a little smoother than Broderick, not as many sharp angles, but really good cape action, and details on the costume are solid. From what I can tell, Cologne may not have done any more work on Doom than this. There's no Fantastic Four on his resume. There are a few Marvel compilations and team-ups that may have had Doom in them, but there's nothing there that jumps out at me. But if all we have is these two issues, not bad, both in terms of the writing and the art. To me, his best artwork in this issue are the two back-to-back splash pages that make up the exact center of the book. These are the Marley pages, and the guy just has a miserable look about him. Those pages could work well in a horror mag. Again, really good work. So this was a very solid interruption to the main storyline, and one of the better uses of the cyberspace setting, which I have to admit, but don't tell Shag, is starting to grow a little stale. But that's where we have to go, so let's take a break here, and when we come back, we'll get back to the ongoing Doom 2099 storyline and head back into cyberspace.
Hear Doctor Who like you've never seen it before. Next time on Doctor Who Dark Journey, Series 3.
Holmes, you've been overdoing it, and I'm taking you away for a break.
Thank you, Doctor.
Welcome to Alice 6, a planet where no one lies.
Ask me no questions and tell me no lies, because I cannot.
No one breaks the law, and...
Yes?
There's been a murder, and you have to catch the killer.
I thought this was supposed to be relaxing, Doctor.
I lied. You are typically known as an alien to the people of Earth. Small, grey, and kinda naked. You also take people in the dark against their wills, experiment on them, or so I hear. And tonight, I have taken you. You're on my ship now. Oh, come on. Don't you believe in alien abduction?
Who is going on a journey, a dark journey? Dark Journey Series 3, The New Adventures. For more exciting adventures in audio time and space, visit us online at amaudiomedia.com.
And we're back. The cover of Doom 2099, number 8, shows the golden cyber body of Fever holding a round globe that contains Doom's visage. And there are many similar globes around Fever, all appearing to be Doom or to represent Doom. "Alas, poor Doom," the construct says. "I slew him well." Okay, after the legitimately good literary quotes that have ended every issue, using a pun based on Shakespeare doesn't really work for me here. At least it's an antagonist that's doing this, so in my mind I can discount this silliness as being Fever's idea, not John Francis Moore's or Pat Broderick's idea. The story, titled Emperor of the Mind, starts in cyberspace. Again. Or, technically, still. Doom has superpowered himself and continues to siphon off energy from the very heart of cyberspace. As he humbly says, "I am the everywhere and the everything, lord of this realm, god in this machine." Wire and Paloma demonstrate a lack of faith by saying he might be slightly over the edge sanity-wise. He is so powerful that he's beginning to overpower network functions and on communication devices in the real world, cracking security processes at Alchemech, Stark Fujikawa, and everywhere else. Not since I tasted the power cosmic have I known such omniscience. Wire wonders if he will ever get out of here and see Zandra again. While she, Zandra, meditates before his prone body in the lab, she is sneaked up upon by a scary ninja woman. Back in AOL, with his power continually expanding, Doom decides it's time to take on Fever. A massive battle ensues, which rages all over Earthlink. The program is impressed by Doom's efforts so far, but is not worried about being defeated. The battle between Doom and Fever is watched by onlookers all over the 2099 universe, as their battle appears on vid screens and comm devices. Meanwhile, back in the real world, Poet sneaks himself around to Vargas' Zeppelin and rescues Fortune. Together, they take control of the airship before DeVargas can invade Latveria. Back at CompuServe, Doom deals the final blow to Fever. Feel the pain of being ripped apart bite by bite in the vortex of your creation. In the real world, the hacker Fever is rendered comatose by these events. Doom then turns his sights onto Vargas, who he knows hired Fever to keep him from ever emerging from Angel Fire. Doom is set on visiting vengeance on DeVargas and shuts off all the controls on the man's ship. "I leave you now to the vagaries of gravity." The problem is that he's actually condemning Poet and Fortune to death as well, because they've actually taken over the ship. So much for the omniscience part. In cyberspace, Wire makes a desperate gamble. Paloma tells him the only way to restore Doom to his regular archetype is to erase her program. Wire does so, and she disappears just before he can lay a smooch on the computer program. But it turns out he may have made things worse. To be concluded. Well, that's a relief, the concluded part, that is. Let's roll right into number 10 and discuss both issues at the end. The cover of Doom 2099 number 10 shows Wire on his surfboard, evidently surfing through my old Commodore 64. Paloma is by his side, and in the background are some blue design elements. When laid next to the covers of 11 and 12, we see that these are Doom's hands and cape. But without that, just this corner of the panoramic poster-style effect, if you don't know what you're looking for, this really lacks obvious doomness. The story, titled Breakdown, picks up where issue 9 left off, which is also pretty much where issue 8 left off as well, because remember 9 was the fill-in. Wire has shut down Paloma in an attempt to restore Doom's regular archetype. Doom did not take this well. "I was omniscient and omnipotent. All of cyberspace lay before me, mine to access, mine to rule. Now I have nothing." Believing, correctly, that this is Wire's fault, Doom grabs the man, telling him to prepare to pay the consequences. Wire tries to talk sense to him, but Doom refuses to let Wire's words confuse him. Wire flees, but he knows he can't run forever. Paloma suddenly appears and comes between them, and we learn that she was not deactivated by Wire, but in fact, she has developed to the point of some level of self-awareness. After bantering about who has the power in the cyber world and the real world, Doom broaches the subject of he and Paloma entering into a negotiation. During this interaction, Paloma shows Doom and Wire their actual bodies, still comatose, Remember that ninja-like woman who found Xandra last issue? She is in the Guild of Mercenaries, we learn, and is there to offer Xandra an apprenticeship. DeVargas's ship, the Cicada, is still crashing. I take comfort that you two commoners will die with me, he says. Poet and Fortune regain control of the ship, but DeVargas grabs a weapon that he had hid, and he manages to regain control of the situation. He orders that the invasion of Latveria commence. The country is soon under the control of the Pixel Corporation. Citizens are told to return to their homes. Public assembly is hereby illegal until the transition is completed. Resistance will be severely punished. But Doom's deal with the Guild of Independent Elite pays off as they fend off DeVargas' invasion of Latveria. The thing about DeVargas is that he is a total germaphobe. He has basically plastic-wrapped himself. But even then, he doesn't want any outside contact with people or the environment. So when the windows of his airship descend, he panics. Feeling a chill, DeVargas? Doom's image asks from a vid screen. We learn that Paloma aided in the defense of Latveria, and that the program has given control of the airship back over to Fortune. With the country safe, Doom and Wire return to real space. After Wire gives Xander a big smooch, a conversation that I have to believe is metatextual occurs. Xandra, I've had enough of cyberspace. Doom, as have I. And all the readers say, amen. We have all had enough of cyberspace. But with Paloma's cyberspace resources, Doom wrests control of the Pixel Corporation away from DeVargas. By way of a cybernetic implant inside DeVargas, Doom gives Paloma a real-world vehicle and control over Pixel. So he's put Paloma, the program, inside one of his great enemies. As per their negotiation, Doom also gains access to all of Pixel Company's resources. Later, at the grand reopening of the new and improved Castle Doom, Doom is totally giving an awesome speech about how great he is, how great Latveria will be, and also how great he is. In essence, that's the end of the plot elements that we've been developing over these last, really, probably 5 or 6 issues. The last few pages of issue 10 are the denouement, and they set up the next storyline. Xandra informs Wire that she is leaving Latveria to take up the apprenticeship. And Fortune receives the shocking news that a Chinese craft recently crashed into Latveria, and that the pilot has made claims that her brother Kaz, who we haven't heard about in probably 5 issues, is alive and in grave danger. All right, as Trennis Magnus would say, what did I think of these issues? First, the quotes. In issue 8, it's from Winston Churchill. The empires of the future are the empires of the mind. And issue 10 has a quote from a Scottish psychiatrist, R.D. Lang. Madness needs not be all breakdowns. It may also be breakthrough. It is a potential liberation and renewal, as well as enslavement and existential death. I really dig the Churchill quote, be honest. I really dig Churchill. And it fits very nicely into the storyline, and it's short and pithy. The empires of the future are the empires of the mind. That's a great quote, and it's a great choice of a quote. The other one is a bit wordy, and I guess the theme is that Doom is mad. That is a theme that has been referenced more than once in these last few issues. But that it's uncertain how that madness will manifest. I think that's what's going on. A few people did mention, again, that they thought Doom had gone around the bend. So that may have been what the quote was about. As long as questions of Doom's sanity continue to be raised in the future, then I can see where this quote could work thematically. We've seen that John Francis Moore has been able to lay down groundwork, lay down clues, and bring them back a number of issues later, like the fate of Kaz. We learned of his death as part of Fortune's backstory. There was no sense that there was more to the story than that. I like that kind of comic book writing, the kind that rewards you for a careful reread. But we need to address the obvious. First off, let's celebrate that we're out of cyberspace. It was a way of demonstrating Doom's technological skills and powers, I suppose. And in Fever, it gave him an enemy of a sort that he could pour all of those powers against. That worked. We also learn a lot about Wire as a character, and saw how his relationship with Doom grew during their time in the cyber world. A good thing about this time is that it did have real-world consequences. That helps. Doom was able to learn a ton of information, bringing himself pretty much up to speed on the modern world that he's found himself in. So in some ways, maybe we've moved past the man-out-of-time stuff. There was also some mysterious stuff and information that Doom learned that I don't even remember whether it comes back in the series or not. Again, Moore may have been laying the groundwork for potential stories that he could have gone back to. And Doom was able to use his super-powered cyberspaceness to destroy DeVargas and to maintain his hold on the business and political interests of Latveria. He actually put an ally of sorts in Paloma in charge of Pixel, one of his biggest rivals. The implanting of a different consciousness into a body is a long-time sci-fi staple, and I usually don't like it, because to me it is so unrealistic, I can't take it seriously. But putting this off into the future, 110 years from when the story was written, still 80 years from now, I can sort of give that one a sci-fi pass. Yes, the cyberspace stuff took longer than it needed to be, from our perspective now in 2016. But again, it wasn't a total waste. We did get character growth, but we also got plot advancement that happened during that long, long time in the cyber world. It just took too long to get out of there. I agree with Doom that it was time to get back to the real world. I love that that conversation occurred inside the comic book, whether intentionally metatextual or not. It was pretty funny. There was some nice world building as those battles with Fever that showed up on video screens across the real world back in issue 8. Those were witnessed by Punisher 2099, among other characters from other titles within the line. His couple of pages, the Punishers, are the most notable, and he is definitely the tough guy you would expect him to be. I liked that the 2099 books did cross over, occasionally explicitly, but often like this, implicitly. As long as the line stayed relatively contained to just a handful of titles, they could pull this cross-pollination off pretty seamlessly. I guess this is editor Joey Cavalieri's job, and so far he's done that part of his job pretty well. I do like what Pat Broderick did with Paloma and Fever in cyberspace, mostly Paloma, because she appears in a number of different guises, my favorite being sort of embedded into a construct of a tree after she's been brought to sentience. I interpreted that sort of as the Tree of Life, which worked thematically. And in the final scene, in issue 10, the rebuilt Castle Doom looks great. What I like about issue 10 in particular is that Moore doesn't just bring to a close Doom's time in the cyber world. He also brings to a close Doom's battle with DeVargas and Pixel Corp, which have been ongoing plot threads since the very early days of the title. And I like the promise of where the series is going at this point. We have the core team seemingly dividing up, Fortune going one way, Xander going another. And the next issue box gives us a tantalizing promise. Coming next, Wakanda 2099. The verdict on Doom 2099 issues 8, 9, and 10. The cyberspace issues have not been my favorite, but that plot was brought to a close satisfactorily, and in doing so, another long plot was also brought to a close. That's good scripting. And I really dug that fill-in, too, so of course, all of these are well worth your 2 bits. Quarter bin deals all the way around. That wraps up my coverage of Doom 2099, issues 8, 9, and 10, bringing episode 79 of the Quarter Bin Podcast to a close. in episode 80, we're heading back to the world of Amalgam books, covering both JLX and JLX Unleashed. If you have any questions or comments about these issues, the episode, or the podcast in general, feel free to contact me. Until next episode, I'm Professor Allen, and I'll see you in the quarter bin. The Quarter Bin Podcast is part of the Relatively Geeky family of podcasts. Show notes and links are available at relativelygeekypodcast.blogspot.com, where the podcasts Uncovering the Bronze Age and Short Box Showcase also make their home. Links to Facebook and Twitter are there as well. Feedback for the show is welcome at relativelygeeky@gmail.com. And if you like what we've got going here, please leave a review and a rating in iTunes. It'll help more people discover the show. Thanks again for listening. Professor!